Super Talk Mississippi Media Production. You're listening to Thunder and Lightning on Super Talk Mississippi, covering Mississippi State sports like nobody else. With Sports Talk Mississippi's Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk of On3 Sports. Now get ready for Thunder and Lightning.
This is Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk Mississippi. Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk here with you on a Tuesday morning. Thanks for joining us here at supertalk.fm or wherever it is that you get podcasts from. We appreciate you guys out there, our great listeners, especially our servicemen and women out there taking care of us. We want to thank our sponsors over at Strange Brew Coffeehouse and Churn and Spoon Ice Cream. Start your day the right way with a trip to the drive-thru over at Strange Brew Coffeehouse here in Starkville, or at Brupolo over in Tupelo. It'd be a little weird, Robbie, if Brupolo was in Furry.
Furry? That would be a little weird.
Wherever you are in our great state, you can enjoy Strange Brew Coffee each and every morning. It's only a click away at strangebrewcoffeehouse.com. The Mississippi Beef Council wants to remind you that beef, it is what's for dinner. Whatever you're cooking out this weekend, nothing beats the sizzle of beef on the grill. Whatever you're going to be doing this weekend, if you're watching baseball, if you're just enjoying some time off, if you just want to have something with the family, if you're firing up the grill, make sure that beef is the main attraction. Nobody has ever come to a cookout and said, oh, steak? No one's. It's never happened in the history of mankind. And it won't happen this weekend at your house. Beef, it's what's for dinner, thanks to our friends, the Mississippi Beef Council.
It probably has happened, but those people are just weird.
I don't want to be friends with those people. Those people's opinions don't count.
Yeah.
Cancel me if you need to on that one.
I hate to say it, but yeah.
I don't care. Anybody ever showed up at my house at the cookout and was like, you got any vegan options? Just get out. I don't need you here. You don't need to be here. It's just not going to end well. Let's just cut the cord now, and we'll move our separate ways.
We are not going to get along.
No. College Corner, collegecornerstore.com. That's the place to find the maroon and white merchandise that you're looking for. Just a couple weeks away to Mother's Day, guys. If mom is a Bulldog, get her a gift at College Corner. Two locations to serve you in the Jackson area. They're in Ridgeland by Fleet Feet. They're in Floyd by the Half Shell. Or you can always just shop online at collegecornerstore.com. Restaurant Tyler is Starkville's flagship restaurant for lunch, dinner, or Sunday brunch. The best meal in town is always going to be at Restaurant Tyler. If you want to enjoy a fantastic lunch, it's easy to do. Just go get the blue plate at Restaurant Tyler. Fried chicken, fried catfish, pork chops, meatloaf, hamburger steak, all the southern favorites, all the sides, the cornbread, everything you're looking for lunch, they've got it at Restaurant Tyler. I will give a disclaimer. It will be difficult to go back to work after that lunch. You will want to just go and take a nap, but that's the price we all pay for lunch here in the South. If you want to have a great lunch, the place to go is Restaurant Tyler. Priority One Bank, 16 locations to serve you throughout Central Mississippi. Let PriorityOneBank.com be your guide. They'll show you not only where they're going to be located, but they're going to show you how they're going to help you invest and manage your money and prepare for the future. And now more than ever, when you have questions about your money, you need answers. You need them on your schedule. You need to talk to a bank that provides you a different kind of service, a different level of service. That's what you're going to get with Priority One Bank. If you live in Central Mississippi, you live near a Priority One Bank location. Let Priority One Bank make you their priority. Well, let's just jump right into it.
Creeping, 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 creeping. Creeping, 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 creeping.
Nothing like some unexpected recruiting news, right? This is a couple in a row here for Mississippi State where they're making it a little easier on the fan base. You know, we've been talking so much about how they get these guys in and they visit and then they go visit other places, and it's a process. Yesterday, Mississippi State has basically a 48-hour recruitment. Offer, visit, commit. Today they get a guy I didn't even know they were recruiting, Robbie. This guy was not on my radar. Was Maryland transfer Javen James on your radar?
Can't say that he was.
Huh? This is what happened. I'm not making this up. I went for a walk this morning, as I always do. Got back in, and like one of the first tweets I saw was you talking to that guy about how SEC people can't transfer in the spring. And I was like, wait, what? Who transferred? And I had to go find it. I had no idea it was coming, had no idea it was happening. So Javen James comes to Mississippi State from Maryland via Akron. Or is it from Maryland via Akron, or is it from Akron via Maryland? Because he only played at Akron.
He took part in spring, so I count that.
Okay.
So he technically was at Maryland. I'll say he's a Maryland transfer.
Maryland transfer.
Fine. Carson Lee will be considered a Mississippi State transfer wherever he goes.
Okay. All right. Absolutely. So, I mean, he's an offensive lineman. There's not like there's a whole lot of stats to break down or anything other than this guy has gotten a good bit of playing experience. I want to talk more, though, in this particular show about Phil Loadholt. A guy that, you know, I think if we could go back in time, maybe you should have tried to give him the reins of this offensive line room a little earlier in the process, because maybe he could have had some more success in the winter window. But
maybe, you know, I think, just real quick, Jeff Lebby wanted him to be a part of the staff initially
when he
was hired, and he was going to be offensive analyst, offensive line assistant or whatever. I think Lebby wasn't quite ready to hand him the keys, but maybe he should have. Mm-hmm. Maybe he should have just let him have that year. But I think what Lebby really wanted was some kind of experience there with a guy that's been in the SEC. And what we're seeing now is maybe Loadholt should have just been given it, you know, last year.
Should have just been the guy from the jump. And yeah. You know, that's a mistake that Lebby made, but he corrected it quickly. Loadholt, to me, and look, these guys he's recruiting, they may not pan out one bit, right? But in this day and age of college football, when you can flip your roster, when there's no excuse to not be trying to upgrade at every position because there's always going to be players out there, this guy has no mercy. He is a killer. He has come in and basically walked in and looked at the offensive line group and went, nope, and has begun the process of processing players and bringing in new competition. He's got four guys in here already. And, you know, again, he was at Maryland in the spring. Jaquan Bolden was at Purdue but didn't play. But these are guys that were playing power football to some level. And then the one guy that isn't from the power level has a ton of experience. So, if nothing else, you may mention this yesterday, and we talked about it throughout the spring. The first time we talked with Jeff Lebby, the very first time we talked to him this spring, he couldn't get the words, the offensive line needs upgrading, out of his mouth fast enough. And for a guy who tends to be kind of coach speaky about most everything he says, he was very clear on that one. He was very intentional, as he might say. So bringing in Phil Loadholt, he is a coach that has, if nothing else, has worked his ass off to address the problem and get players here to Mississippi State. I don't think he's done with that either. Mississippi State would be a lot better served if everybody on the staff had this same mentality.
Yeah, and we went through this yesterday, but it continues to be hammered across here that they're not happy with what they have there, and you have other options available in the transfer portal. Go do what you can to make sure you can build what you want to build, at least with what's been given to you here for next season. There's no reason anymore to just be okay with what you have. If there's an opportunity out there to go improve a room, to go improve, a depth chart, whatever, you go do it. And what we're seeing here, as they've already put four guys in that room from the spring portal and they've sent two out, is that he's trying to fix whatever issues they had in the spring and make this a more competent line. And that goes deeper than just the starting lineup, because these four guys are not all four going to start. At most, I could see probably two of them starting. But what you do is you add depth to that room that makes it a quality room, a more competent room by the SEC standards. And they didn't have that in the spring. And it was very noticeable right away. As a matter of fact, I talked to somebody in the first practice that is part of the whole process that told me, you know, I'm just looking out here at this offensive line, it doesn't look like a offensive line that's going to be able to compete in this league. Like it showed up immediately. And I think they knew that when the, I mean, and here's the thing. A lot of times you don't know if these guys are going to be able to handle the SEC until they actually get here. There's only so much you can do. I mean, you go out and you recruit guys and you hope that they're really good players and they translate to the SEC. And when they get here, they don't. And if you have the spring to see that, then you move on from them and you go find somebody else. Jameel Burrows was a guy that we talked about when he first committed, and there was a ton of people that were just enraged that Mississippi State took that guy. And I tried to explain to people right away, this is an opportunity for like a tryout. This isn't going to be one of their top-end guys. They're not expecting this guy to come in on the defensive line and be, you know, a game wrecker, a Jeffrey Simmons type. But what you have is a guy that was recruited by everybody coming out of high school, has always had the talent. He just hasn't been able to put it all together. And if you were able to get something out of that, it's a major win. So he comes in the spring and was completely, perfectly capable of providing depth for you. And he's staying at Mississippi State. And I think this year is going to help Mississippi State on the defensive line. Those are the kind of guys that you can work with in the spring, see if they're able to come in and do something defensively, offensively, whatever. And if they are, then you get a major win there. So they didn't get that from Carson Lee and what was the other one?
Malik Ellis?
No. Rammel? Was it Rammel?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Jesse
Rammel, yeah.
Both of those guys were brought in the spring, didn't work out, send them out. You get four new guys come in here to try to provide some depth. So I think the offensive line, without question, to me, is better right now without these guys on campus than it was in the spring. And hopefully they all gel together. The guys that haven't yet really matured and taken that step, they take that step in the fall, and you have an offensive line that can pave the way for some big things. But I think that Phil Loadholt has made that room better. How much better? We won't know until probably middle of the season, whenever you start SEC play. I don't know if we'll know that even right away, but I do think that this is a more capable offensive line, and they're going to look more like an SEC offensive line than they did in the fall. I mean, in the spring.
I disagree with you. I think you find out week one, because you go back a year ago, and the way they could not run the football on Arizona State, and the way they could not move the football on Toledo.
I don't think that that told the full story of the offensive line. I thought the offensive line got better.
It did get better.
At the end of the year, you look at the stats in the first four games, and some people will tell you that's Blake Shapen's fault, and I'll tell you that's wrong.
Screw that. Yeah.
I think the offensive line had not gelled at that point. I think it's going to take time for them to gel. I don't think you can expect to put, I'm going to say, three new faces on the offensive line for game one. Mm-hmm. And just expect them to be flawless. I think it's going to take time. I don't think we will know for sure what that offensive line is going to be and how productive it can be in the first four games. I think it's going to take and that's just part of the transfer portal era. You're not going to have – the teams that have continuity up front are going to have the best offensive lines. Mm-hmm. The teams that are having interchangeable positions and they're having three, four, five different offensive linemen every year – they're going to struggle at times. I mean, there's that's just an offensive line. You have five guys that are on the same page. And whenever you have players that have played together for 2-3 years, to me, when you add in the talent, those are the best offensive lines. That's just the way I see it. That's the way I've always felt about the offensive line. I think more than any other group, that group has got to play a lot of snaps together.
I would just say that you're playing a USM team week one that is not the same team you played a year ago, right? You talk about needing to find cohesion. A lot of new faces at USM. Now, a lot of them played together at Marshall last year, but boy, if State can't move the football in that USM defense, I'm gonna have an early melt. I'll just go ahead and tell you, it's gonna be early.
I'm not saying that they won't be able to move the football. I just don't think that the offensive line will be a seasoned group right away.
I agree with that.
They could still be really good, and this group should be able to move around Southern Miss. I mean, if you can't move them around.
Last year, they would have been able to move around Toledo, though, and they didn't.
But we both love Cody Kennedy, but there's a reason that we're seeing now that they made that move. Jeff Levy was not happy with the coaching development and recruiting that was going on at offensive line. He feels a lot better about Full Load Holt. The thinking is, the hope is, that you will be better prepared going into game one, and that hopefully you'll be more talented too going into game one. And even if you aren't ready to be the offensive line that you think you can be, you could at least be good enough to move around some of these group of five teams.
I feel like I'm going to know a lot week one. That's what I feel. I could be wrong and you could be right, and we'll see. But yeah, because if they go down there and they just push USM around and they win like 48-14, I'm going to be like, okay. If nothing else, they should be respectable. You know,
I just think, like, I don't even think it's an argument. I think any team is usually not as good as they're going to be in game one.
No. I'm not saying that we're going to see them at their best in week one, but last year, week two, week three, they were terrible. And so when we say, okay, they've improved the talent and it looks more like an SEC offensive line, okay, go out and dominate a Sun Belt team, because you should be able to do that. That's how I'm going to view this. So
should be able to, but I'm just not going to draw any conclusions right away.
I'm more worried that they're going to win that game like 48-35, and that's going to be where my be like, oh God, the defense. We're going to be right back.
You need the defense to be ahead of the offense, I think.
Absolutely. If we're being realistic, and I'm not trying to disrespect Southern Mississippi. I really am not. But if you give up more than 24 points to them, that's an issue.
Yeah, because here's the points you and I have tried to make about this Southern Miss thing over the years,
mm-hmm.
is that there's a lot of people in this fan base that have watched. I mean, you've seen some of it too.
I grew Southern up on Miss it. USM beat, dominated that series when I was a kid.
Yeah. Times have changed.
Yeah.
The two, even with Mississippi State at 2-10, the talent level should be drastically different at this point. And if it's not, if you go out there and it's a very close ball game, then you've got issues. And as we've seen, I mean, 2 years ago, Mississippi State was very poor and had just lost its head coach. And they still went out, even though they struggled kind of early, they went out and they dominated USM for the most part. Now, they have a more competent coach. I feel like Charles Huff's going to do a great job there. But I also feel like he's not quite ready as far as what he wants his roster to be. So if State can't go out there in game one and comfortably win, then you're going to be concerned about this team moving forward. And I think the defense needs to be setting the tone in that game. You went out and you added SEC caliber talent, at least you feel like you did, in the front seven. You feel like you're going to be able to get more pass rush. They've got to go out and really dominate this ball game in game one and really get people excited again and bought in and show that you're moving forward and you're getting better and you're not kind of staying at the bottom tier of the SEC.
So getting back to Load Holt, I'm very excited for what this guy can do with a full recruiting cycle.
We got breaking news. Zach Owens just committed to Mississippi State from Colorado. So they just added another one. A former four-star, by the way. 6'6", 345.
Another one.
We need a Load Holt GIF.
Yeah, I reached out to our buddies over at MSU football, the video team. I was like, I need some pictures of Load Holt. But now I'm correct. We need a GIF at this point. So, goodness gracious. I what's funny is I sent a text to a source. I was like, man, Load Holt is a killer, like 5 minutes ago. And now this happens. What's going on? So add another to the list. Mississippi State has picked up offensive tackle Zechariah Owens, was at Clemson, then Colorado, now here at Mississippi State. This guy is massive, 6'6", 345 pounds.
Well, I feel like Load Holt has a type. Now, Javen James is a little thinner. He's under 300, I think, but he's a tackle. It's very clear that Loadholt likes the big boys, the hog mollies. And not just like short and fat, like 6'5", 6'6".
Oh, okay. You're you wouldn't recruit me?
Not the St. Aloysius Brian Haydads.
Brother, St. Aloysius Brian Haydad was a slim, trim 5'10 and a half and 205 pounds back in the day. Lean, mean tackling machine. You know, it's funny. I started my senior year, I was 215 to start the year, and I was the heaviest guy on the line of the starters.
It was like the offensive line from the 1950s.
We really were. We had a bunch of guys at like 195, and we were just in better shape than everybody. That was our thing. So yeah, Loadholt. Now he might have recruited my cousin. You're not gonna get past Augustinelli, as they say.
Can we get the highlight drop?
I need the highlight video.
I've got to have the highlight.
Well, so this is crazy. We did not know this was gonna happen when we started this this podcast, that he was gonna go grab another guy. But goodness gracious, again, he came into the. Again, these guys may never pan out. They may not be any good. But this is a guy who came into a situation, realized immediately, I've got to do something here. I cannot go through this season like this. I'll get Shapen killed. I might get Crumman, Hawk, and Taylor killed too. And he is going about the process, at least, of trying to upgrade his room. This is a guy he should have familiarity to with as well. He should know.
He knows whether or not he can play.
Because, you know, you can't – we talked about this with Lebby the other day. Right now, all you got to go on is film and your evaluation. You can't put him out to in the practice field right now. So this is a guy, at least with Loadholt, he knows this guy and knows what he can do. So
Phil Loadholt, 3-star transfer portal guy, but 88, so he's
right on the verge there.
So the people in the industry still think that he can play.
Yeah.
He obviously went to Clemson. Just a little background on him. Went to Clemson at a high school. At a high school in Georgia, in McDonough, he was a 4-star, almost 4-star composite. Mm-hmm. Of all people, we had him as a 3-star. Everybody else had him 4-star, 247.
What I always say, it's why I go to other sites for my recruiting info.
Yeah, of course. 247 had him a top 200 player nationally. The industry had him 277 overall. Offers from all over, Georgia, Clemson, South Carolina, Florida State, the works. Transfers, played in a couple of games, I think, at Clemson. He transferred to Colorado, which would have played for Phil Loadholt last year, and got back in the portal after one season. So another thing I really like is Loadholt's he's kind of staggering these players. We have James has 3 years of eligibility remaining. Owens has 3 years of eligibility remaining, I believe. Bolden has 2 more years. And then Steen, he have 2 more years left?
I think Steen's just one, but I could be
just
wrong.
It might be. And then the center, obviously, 1 more year. So he's not just bringing in a lot of 1-year players. This is a guy that is – he's been very methodical in how he's done this. I'm really impressed. You're right. We don't know if they're going to be able to play or not, but the impressive thing about it is he's not thinking about what do we have to do to patch this together this year. He's trying to build the offensive line for multiple years down the road, and you're going to stack that with an offensive line class and then transfer portal class next year. But he's trying to build the whole room now.
Yeah.
And it's not a quick fix thing.
Yeah,
it's been really smart work by him, and I'm sure Jeff Lebby is involved too. Lebby is an offensive line guy. I'm sure both of them are working hand in hand, but Loadholt has been impressive. What's going to matter is their production on the field. A lot of people were not happy with Colorado's production, but by the end of the year, my point, they got better. This was an offensive line that, as the year progressed, they were better and better, and by the end of the season, they had a couple of freshmen that were really impressive. They had some other guys that had a really standing out. He was winning big recruiting battles. He won some big recruiting battles against Mississippi State. This is a guy that I think is going to stabilize that room, and he's going to line up with Jeff Lebby. They both are kind of kindred spirits in what they do offensively. So I think this right now, early returns are very good.
It's a shame we only get to talk to the assistants once a year. I would like to pick his brain a little bit more, but we'll have to wait until, I guess, August to talk to the big man on campus, Phil Loadholt. All right, let's move into the rest of the show that's brought to you by our friends over at Two Brothers Smoked Meats in the heart of the Cotton District. Man, I could go for some of those delicious smoked wings. Wing Wednesday won't be, it's only a day away. Today's Taco Tuesday. Tomorrow's Wing Wednesday. I don't know what Thursday is, but it's just a good day to go eat at Two Brothers. And, of course, the Older Brother, where you can find only the fanciest of sandwiches. Here in the great city of Starkville. If you're going to be in the Cotton District this weekend for Super Bulldog, for the Starkville Derby, might I suggest finding some time to enjoy a great meal at Two Brothers Smoked Meats and the Older Brother. Great products, great service. Every business likes to promise it to you. They deliver it to you at Advantage Business Systems. That's what they've been doing for 50 years.
50? 50.
Wherever you are in our great state, if you're looking for...
350.
How much does that kid weigh? How about Tree Fitty?
Zechariah Owens is over Tree Fitty.
Over Tree Fitty.
He's about Tree 85.
Tree 85? Goodness. When you need business technology, give Advantage Business Systems a call. If you're looking for a new copier or a new printer, new computers, Advantage Business Systems is the number to call. Great products, yes, but the service after the sale, that's what makes them stand out and above their competitors. 601-362-9192, or you can visit them online, absms.com. Find out how Advantage Business Systems will help your business do business. If you're going to be in Starkville this weekend or any weekend, you need to head to Maroon & Co. when you need Mississippi State gear, or you can always just shop online at maroonandco.com. Whatever you're looking for, Maroon & White, they've got it. Clothes, stuff for your house, your car, your tailgate, everything Mississippi State. If you're looking for a custom cowbell by our friends at the Bellsmith, they've got them at Maroon & Co. And, of course, they do still sell the Bulldog Initiative stuff, which if you want to help out Mississippi State Athletics, go buy one of those polos or pullovers. The coaches are still wearing them, and so can you. Use our promo code, THUNDER15, to save 15% off your order on regular price items. Some exclusions will apply. Next time you're in Starkville, make sure you're headed to Maroon & Co. before you head to the game. All right, back on the spring preview. We got two more to do, and then we'll be wrapped up. I will do what I did last year and put together a full show of all of those previews that if you want to go back and let's do it. So they'll have 15 interviews on there from Alabama through Vanderbilt. But today it's the Texas Longhorns, a very interesting team when you look at them, Robbie, because they will likely be preseason top five, and yet they lost a ton of production. We saw that in the NFL draft this weekend. So we'll talk a little bit about that right now with our new friend. I brought in some new talent. I'm like Phil Loadholt. I'm bringing new talent into the podcast. We got a lot of first-time interviews in this spring series, so I'm glad to see that. Eric Henry from Horns 24/7 is our newest guest. Let's go to that interview now and talk about the Texas Longhorns. They came into the SEC last year and looked SEC-ready from day one. What does year two bring for the Texas Longhorns? Eric Henry joins us now, 24/7 Sports, Horns 24/7. I know he started a couple games last year, including one against Mississippi State, but I'm calling this Arch Manning's debut here for the Texas Longhorns. For your money, is this the most anticipated debut in Texas football history?
Yeah, first off, appreciate you having me on. Listen, I've been on the beat 3 years. I don't know if I can say Texas football history, but I think you don't have to be a college football historian to look at, what I affectionately referred to as Arch Mania, right? The hoopla around Arch Manning last year, and say that you can't think of very many athletes, quite frankly, I think in sports where their full-time starting debut, as you noted, Arch started a couple games last year, but them officially being the guy, I don't think you can find very many debuts in sports that are more anticipated than Arch Manning. Won't belabor the point, but we all know all the things that come with him, right? The last name, the five-star ranking, and just kind of him. I think, even the little glimpses of what you saw last season may have even heightened the anticipation for August 30th, at Ohio State.
this is a Texas team, you know, they lost a ton. There's just no getting around that. And, you know, they're still going to be ranked in the top probably five to start this season. The first place I want to start is the offensive line. You know, we're recording the day after the NFL draft. Kelvin Banks was picked by the New Orleans Saints in the first round. Texas lost a good number of starters off of what was the best offensive line, I think, in college football last year. A lot of teams would go to the portal and immediately try to you know, bring in guys who are starters at other schools. Texas looks like they're going to go with their guys that they've developed and they've been in the program for a while. Is that a move that, you know, teams like Texas can do because they can recruit elite talent? But is that a smart move in this day and age of the portal, that maybe stick with your guys that know the system and you're not trying to force cohesion onto five new guys?
You took the words right out of my mouth. I've been a big believer in this. I mean, look no further than Oklahoma last year, for example, right? You know, they tried to portal a bunch of guys, and maybe that was by necessity. I'm not critiquing Oklahoma. Each school has to do what they have to do, right? But I've long been of the belief that, yes, you can portal maybe a receiver, even though Texas, most notably Matthew Golden, A.D. Mitchell the year prior, it took them a little while to find their footing in Steve Sarkisian's offense as a receiver. But you can possibly portal, you know, corner certain spots. Offensive line is a cohesion and a mental position in my mind. I think Steve Sarkisian, you know, while he hasn't outwardly said it publicly, I do believe that he shares kind of the belief of me. And listen, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm the one who imparted this wisdom on him. But when you have multiple offensive line coaches throughout your career and multiple guys telling you, no, put your foot this way, or no, lead with this hand, or no, strike this way, I mean, that'll mess up an offensive lineman. So to your point, I think was really astute on your part the way you mentioned it. Steve has long praised Kyle Flood, Texas's co-offensive coordinator and offensive line coach, of course, former Rutgers head coach, as one being one of the better offensive line coaches in the nation. They like to bring in their guys, develop him and recruit him. And I'll give you this real quick before I let you get to your next question. If you wanted any proof in that, if you take a look, Texas over the last three recruiting classes has signed, not including the 2025 class, excuse me, so prior three, they've signed 8 4- or 5-star recruits at offensive line, right? Ironically enough, Kelvin Banks wasn't even the highest rated recruit in his class. It was DJ Campbell. But you take a look at some of the 3-stars that have worked out. Connor Robertson, Cam Williams, who likely will be drafted at some point, probably, I guess not Sunday, now Saturday, right? You said that last day being Sunday, but Cam Williams was a 3-star recruit. Trevor Goosby, who they are depending to be their left tackle this year, 3-star recruit. So they do believe that they can, A, recruit the position well, and B, maybe find some hidden gems and develop them really well into what they want up front.
With, you know, trying to replace starters at wide receiver and running back, how wide open are those position battles this spring?
I'll start with running back. I think RB2 is a little wide open, I guess, to give your audience the background, right? C.J. Baxter, the nation's number one overall running back recruit 2 years ago, signs with Texas, earns the starting running back job out of camp as a true freshman, battles some injuries, and then eventually Jonathan Brooks, who of course was drafted by the Carolina Panthers, ends up emerging as the lead back. He takes the role, right? C.J. still had a solid freshman year, and there were high hopes for him as a sophomore, but then he goes down with a major knee injury that paves the way for Quintrevion Wisner to emerge as the lead back, rushed for over 1,000 yards. So he's going to be the RB1. Where CJ is in his recovery, he didn't really take part in spring ball. So it's going to come down to how he kind of progresses over the summer and the fall to probably, you know, compete and see where he is with RB2. Christian Clark was another 4-star recruit that they had at running back. He ended up going down a week after CJ with Achilles injury. And, you know, that is certainly has him on the mend as far as recovering. He didn't take part in spring in the same fashion as well, right? So really, you take a look, you got a couple of true freshmen, James Simon, Ricky Stewart, they're going to be competing. And then you have the one running back who seemingly didn't get hurt last year outside of Wisner, and Jarrett Gibson. So I think that's wide open for RB2. Receiver, now you start taking a look at some of the additions they've made, most notably Emmett Mosley, the 5th coming in from Stanford. I would say the top 3 are set, right? You got Mosley, you got Ryan Wingo, you got DeAndre Moore. Where are some of the rest of these freshmen or redshirt freshmen come in? That's where things get interesting. Steve Sarkisian has shown that he will. His first 3 years, He was rolling with three receivers. Those are the guys who've earned my trust. Those are the guys who are going to play. Last year, he expanded that receiver room because there was so much talent, was shown that he will run out four and five receivers. So depending on what they want to do at the position, is there room for, you know, maybe a five-star freshman like a Jamie French or a Kalik Lockett or maybe a Parker Livingstone, I think is a name that your audience should know. 6'4", about a $190, $195, was a three-star recruit, but is super athletic, right? He was kind of the lead guy with some of the injuries in spring camp. Keep an eye on him, but I guess it's a long-winded way of saying probably more open competition at wide receiver than there is running back.
On the defensive side of the ball, it's kind of the same story. A lot of production gone from this Texas team from a year ago. Who are the new faces we need to be keeping an eye on there?
Yeah, I'll start at the defensive line. In terms of new faces, defensive tackle, Steve Sarkisian again, Pete Kukowski, defensive coordinator, Kenny Baker, defensive line coach, defensive tackle coach. They have gone heavy in the portal the last 2 years with defensive tackles. They brought in five this year, right? I think the names to know, I could run down all five, but I'll kind of give you a couple. One, Travis Shaw was brought in from North Carolina, former five-star recruit, top 20 recruit in the nation overall. Battled knee injuries when he was at North Carolina. Also struggled with weight. The knee flared up a little bit during the spring, so he was kind of on a pitch count. It depends on if he can reach that ceiling, that five-star potential. Cole Brevard from Purdue was a big-time run stuffer last year, 6'3", 350 coming in. Keep an eye on him to kind of be that Bill Norton kind of type from last year, although he probably will start. If the season started today, it would be he and Alex January, a returner. And the last one, who they just picked up, Marad Watson, right? Big former freshman All-American from Syracuse. I think you got to keep an eye on him as well because he's someone who is rising. No real new names in the linebacker room, so we can bypass that. But when you go to the secondary, new names that will emerge. One, Jelani McDonald. Andrew Makuba, of course, off to the NFL. He probably will be drafted tonight. Yeah. Jelani McDonald is a kid we've heard about a lot. Was an athlete, kind of a jack of all trades at up there in Waco coming out of high school. Makes the move to defense, starts out as a linebacker, and then moves to safety. He described his game when we talked with him yesterday as physical and violent, and known as one of the hardest hitters on the team. So that's a new name. And then also really quick, I'd say on the outside, keep an eye on Kobe Black, as a four-star recruit who got some playing time down the stretch last year, has really impressed as well.
We've mentioned a couple of true freshmen. Are there any more that you want to give a quick shout-out to that could play a role for Texas this year?
Yeah. In terms of true freshmen, I would say I'll do one at receiver. Michael Terry is someone to keep an eye on as a five-star recruit, a five-star athlete. Enrolled early, actually started practicing with the team during the CFP, college football playoff, at receiver. He's someone who they're very high on, so keep an eye on him. On the defensive side of the ball, Jonah Williams. This kid right now actually is, you know, filling the Texas Longhorn baseball, number one Texas baseball. Yeah. They're void in the outfield, but mm-hmm. he is a freak of nature. I mean, it's you don't want to be hyperbolic, but when you got Jim Schlossnagel and Steve Sarkisian, Jim Schlossnagel, Texas head baseball coach, you know, invoking the names of Deion and Bo Jackson after, you know, the kid's only 17, but has stepped in doing his thing on the baseball field, but on the football field, on the gridiron at safety. Big time recruit, and he wants to play both. He is not, you know, I'm just dabbling in one or the other. So right. He's definitely going to make a push for some playing time this year.
This Texas team, you know, a season ago, I thought they were the best team in the country for most of the year. It just didn't pan out there for them in the playoffs and really in the SEC championship game as well. But this year, I feel like the expectations are even bigger because of Arch. And I don't know if that makes sense or not, because this is a team that they were number one in the nation for most of the year last year. But I think the expectations are higher this year for Texas. Am I off on that, or is that something you feel in Austin?
It's tough to kind of compare last year and this. If I was to juxtapose the two, I think coming off of the college football playoff in 23, right, where you lose to Washington, you know, you come up, you know, 14, 15 yards away from playing for national title. Expectations certainly were high. And of course, you get back to the CFP again this year in same circumstance, right? If Texas has better goal line execution against Ohio State, maybe they're playing for a national title. I'll answer it this way. I think the expectations are high, but I don't necessarily know if it's specifically tied to Arch as much as it is just how close Texas has come in the last 2 years. hoping, can they break through that ceiling and you know, make it to a national title? But your point isn't off base. You know, in Austin, some of the flaws, and again, I won't go too long, but some of the perceived flaws of Quinn Ewers that fans had, I think they believe that Arch Manning is kind of the person who, you know, can overcome those things and do some of those things at a higher clip.
We will get to see another Manning take on Mississippi State. We've seen his grandfather. We've seen two of his uncles. Now we'll get to see Arch in Starkville this upcoming season. Eric Henry, 24/7 Sports, man. Really appreciate the time. Really good info today. Thanks.
Anytime. Appreciate you having me on.
I don't know that I've ever seen a team like this Texas team in that they're going to have a ton of preseason hype without a lot of returning production. You know, the running back situation is good there, but they lost their top two receivers, and obviously they lose Quinn Ewers. We all saw Arch. We all know the talent's there, but there's a lot of pressure for a team that has got a lot of new faces.
I think the Arch thing is carrying it. And I think Steve Sarkisian has developed a lot of trust within, you know, the people that follow college football. I mean, if not for some of the issues that he had off the field, he would have had a great career over on the West Coast.
Yeah. I think.
And obviously, you know, everywhere he's been pretty good. And at Texas, he's kind of built them into a national power, something that they had not been since the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. And now you have a guy that, you know, a lot of people look at, just like all the other Mannings, as the savior. And so he's and showed a lot of promise, too. So I think a lot of it lies on Arch. You have a dynamic quarterback that – essentially, whenever he decides to come out, is probably going to be 1-1. If not in the top five picks of the NFL draft, he has all the tools. And they've recruited really well. So I think it's just like a trust that this team's going to be talented. They got the same offense. They got a legit quarterback running it. They're going to be good by default. I think it's a lot tougher than that. Nick Saban proved – to be able to kind of seamlessly transition, but not everybody's been able to do that. Kirby Smart has had some hang-ups for a couple of years. They've still been really competitive, but they haven't been national championship caliber like last year. I didn't think that was the Georgia team we've grown accustomed to seeing. So there's a lot of questions that they have to answer. The fact, as you know, I always give a lot of credence to who's at quarterback. And so with that said, I feel like Texas is going to still do some big things because of who they have at quarterback in the schedule. Man, they have had the best SEC schedule in almost every sport. I don't know why that happened, why they got eased into it the way that they did and Oklahoma didn't.
Texas A&M tried to tell us, Robbie.
This is like
– they control everything. They're like the mafia.
You would think, like, had – with them coming in with that massive ego, the SEC would have said, okay, let's show you what it's like here.
Yeah, they should have been playing
the
Alabama, LSU, all from the jump.
We went over that schedule last year, and our friend South Texas Dog called us idiots for thinking that Texas wasn't going to breeze through that schedule, and they absolutely did, with the exception of the Georgia game, I guess. I just look at the schedule and I look at the talent. I think they're going to be competitive again. They're going to be a team that's competing for the national championship. But you do have to wonder, if things don't come together at certain spots, what that looks like for them. I think they could still kind of not really sleepwalk, but they could have some bumps in the road and still be really good this year.
Yeah, agreed. All right.
The interesting part of the whole Arch Manning thing, and our friend John Sokoloff made this point the other day in the private message that we have.
Johnny Sock
is, will he come out to the draft in 2026? I thought it was kind of a no-brainer, but you know, John made a point to say that there's been conversations and talk and things like that he wants to play two more years. And honestly, a good point. I mean, he's going to make millions in NIL in college. That's what's really kind of changed the trajectory for a lot of guys lately, is the whole NIL sector. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you're talking about a guy that's probably going to make well over $5 million at some point. I could see it. I could see him staying for 2 years. And he does that, they got a chance to be really special the next couple of years.
No doubt. No doubt. All right, one more to go. We'll get the Vanderbilt Commodores out of the way on Thursday's podcast. All right, tomorrow's the rumblings. You know what to do. Send your questions in, and Robbie and I, we will answer them. For Robbie Falk, I'm Brian Haydad. Thanks for listening to Thunder and Lightning here on Super Talk, Mississippi.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.